Welcome to The Positive Twist, a podcast about dystonia. I'm your host, Amanda Benson, and in each episode, I will be interviewing patients, caregivers, and experts who tell their story related to dystonia. Each story ending in, you guessed it, a positive twist. Thank you for tuning in. Now, let's roll the episode. Welcome back to The Positive Twist. In today's episode, we are talking to Mark Edwards and Niccolo Mencacci. They are both recipients of the David Marsden Award. David Marsden was one of the leading neuroscientists of his time and one of the profession's most charismatic personalities. He undoubtedly influenced many of his colleagues and large numbers of younger clinicians and researchers from across the world to become interested in dystonia and movement disorders in general. Dystonia Europe established the David Marsden Award in 2003 in order to acknowledge his work on dystonias and to honor the immense part that he played in improving the lives of so many people who live with the condition. The work of Professor David Marsden has meant a lot to dystonia patients around the world. His legacy continues with the David Marsden Award. And in today's episode, we meet with Mark Edwards, who was the first recipient of the award in 2003, as well as Niccolo Mencacci, who received the David Marsden Award in 2017. Now let's get into the interview. Okay, welcome Mark and Niccolo. Mark, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
So thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And my name's Mark Edwards. I'm a professor of neurology working at St. George's University of London and the Atkinson-Morley Regional Neuroscience Centre. I worked at Queen Square. I was there as a PhD student from 2001 with Kailash Bhatia and John Rothwell. And it was in that context that I started my research in dystonia. And that's how I ended up submitting a paper and in the end winning the David Marsden Prize. And that was back in, I think, 2003, if I've got that correct.
And how had you heard about the David Marsden Award?
So I can't actually remember now, but because I think it was sort of inaugurated around that time. And it was Kailash Bhatia who told me about it and suggested that I should apply, seeing as my PhD had been all about DYT1 dystonia. And so I put in my what I thought was my best paper, the best bit of research that I've been doing at that time.
Great. And Niccolo, as I understand it, you received the latest David Marsden Award in, am I correct, 2017?
I think it's the one before the latest.
The one before the latest, okay.
Yeah, it was one awarded last year, 2019.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you came to hear about the David Marsden Award.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. It's a great pleasure to be here. So my name is Niccolo Mencacci. I am originally from Milan, Italy, where I did my medical studies and my training in neurology. And I currently work at Northwestern University, where I'm assistant professor in neurology. My main focus and interest is dystonia, of course, and in particular is the genetics of dystonia. But Mark and I share some of our path because the work that led to the David Marsden Award was actually conducted at Queen Square as well, where I spent five beautiful years of my life, first as a visiting fellow, and then I took on a proper PhD program where I would work bridging the lab where most of my work was conducted. I worked under the supervision of Professor Wood and Professor Hardy at Queen Square. But I was working very closely with Kailash Bhatia, with Professor Bhatia, and I would see patients with him and conduct genetic research from many of the patients with dystonia that Professor Bhatia would see in his clinic. And through some of his work, I made some findings that resulted in the paper that was awarded the David Marsden Award in 2017. How did I hear about the awards? I don't remember either. And I suspect it was very similar to Mark's experience. It was probably Kailash who told me you should submit because you're doing great. So, you know, you're doing some good research, so you may have a chance. And I remember applying first time in 2015, did not get it. Try again in 2017, and my paper was better. So that's the story, I would say.
Great. So that's interesting that you have a similar story, both in terms of working with Professor Kailash Bhatia and him probably being the one getting you to submit your paper. But I'm curious to know now, did any of you get a chance to ever meet with Professor David Marsden himself?
So unfortunately not. So I came to Queen Square as a junior doctor in the year 2000. And Professor Marsden had died a couple of years before then. So I never got to meet him. But I think his influence was very, very strongly felt amongst all of the people that I was working with in the movement disorder department. And, you know, that was Kailash Bhatia, Neil Quinn, Andrew Lees, Peter Brown. So there was still a very strong presence. And that was also something that I noticed within, from the research point of view, when I started to do my research with John Rothwell. And I suppose also when I started going to international meetings as well and meeting other people who've been influenced by Professor Marsden.
So Professor Marsden, as I understand, has had heavy influence on the work surrounding dystonia and all the developments that we have experienced to this day. Mark or Niccolo, would any one of you like to talk a little bit more about David Marsden, the award, and his legacy?
I can make some thought that I made when I received the award, and also, of course, similar to Mark, I never, of course, never met David Marsden, because my years at Queen Square were way past his time, unfortunately. But I certainly can say that the way he helped to rethink and expand our views on dystonia, and at his time it was mostly about the way we would clinically think about dystonia, but also the way we would think about what lies underneath what dystonia looks like. And it was, of course, coming more from a clinical and neurophysiological point of view. But the way of his way and thoughts about putting order in the complexity, or some people would say the mess that dystonia used to be, and in some reason it still is in the way we think about dystonia, I think that that is a legacy that I feel very strong and I took on a different angle, which is to try to put order and clarity in the complexity of dystonia using genetics as a tool, applying this additional point of view to the clinical and to the neurophysiological approach to dystonia complexity.
So do any of you know how many years David Marsden spent working with dystonia and researching dystonia?
Well, I think I think it's hard to think about it in isolation because it was part of a whole sort of body of work which started with trying to understand more basic aspects of what might be called motor control. So how does the brain control movement? And then a natural progression from that into thinking about how that goes wrong in people with movement disorders, of which dystonia is, you know, one of the commonest behind, say, Parkinsonism and tremor. And so I suppose you could argue that he's working on it throughout his career in a way, because all of that comes together in this, as Niccolo was talking about, this understanding of how to group together what were previously thought of as perhaps disparate movement disorders and how to make a positive diagnosis, and through that to start thinking about treatment. Dystonia is seen as a very key part of David Marsden's legacy because it was, as Niccolo said, such a mess in terms of the way in which people would think about it, whether, you know, is it a real thing or not to start with, and then, you know, how should you put together patients which were previously thought as having different disorders under one category. So it was a massive piece of work, really, to bring some order to the world of dystonia.
So, Mark, you were the first recipient. Do you know how the award came to be? Was this something, an initiative that David Marsden himself had? What is the background story there?
I'm not sure of the answer to that. I know that obviously there was desire amongst the European Dystonia Association and clinicians working in dystonia within Europe to put together something which focused on dystonia and would try and encourage younger researchers coming through to think about dystonia as a topic for their research.
Okay, and tell us about when you received the award. What was it like there? You said it was 2003, so that is almost 20 years ago.
So again, maybe it's my age. My memory of it is a little bit patchy. I remember receiving a letter telling me that I'd been successful in the award. It was at the meeting of what's now the European Academy of Neurology, but was previously a different organization of European neurology, where I received the award. I remember it as a very special occasion and being very proud to be the recipient of this award, very, very proud to be recipient of the award with the name David Marsden on it. Yeah, it was a great day.
And what impact did it come to have on your research moving forward?
So I think that it made me have even more a feeling of kind of responsibility and sort of kinship about the world of dystonia. And there was something that, you know, this, you know, it really was, you know, my topic, and something that was personal to me, and that I would forever be labelled as somebody who's, you know, a person who was interested in dystonia and wanted to make that a key part of their career. So I felt that sort of certain responsibility, I suppose, after the award, but not in a bad way, not in a negative way, but something I was very proud of and wanted to carry forward.
And what about you, Niccolo? So it was pretty much present day, or, you know, as we know it, well, before 2020, but you received the award not long ago. And what did the ceremony look like when you received the award? And in turn, how has that affected your work and your research?
It's one of the most beautiful memories of these recent years for several reasons. Well, first of all, I had just moved to the States, well, just like 6 months. And I remember that one night I wake up in the middle of the night, I was awake, and a mistake that I often do, I check my emails in the middle of the night because I was awake. And all of a sudden, well, and I see the great news that I had won the award. So that was, of course, exciting, but then incredibly exciting. But then I see the other incredibly exciting part of the news is you're invited to travel to Rome for receiving the award in 2 weeks. So, of course, the excitement didn't allow me to go back to sleep. And I called my family, and I remember writing Kailash, Professor Bhatia, Professor Hardy and Moo to let them know about the award. So it was a very exciting moment. And then the trip to Rome was just, and the day of the award, when the award was given to me, was such an emotional day. So my best friends came down from Milan, and they were present when I gave the talk and received the award. It was such a strong moment to see all these patients with dystonia, all in the same room, and there I was very grateful to, feeling very grateful to the community for the honor of representing some of the research, some of the good research that's been done in dystonia, but also with the feeling of representing a testimony of the work that we need to put forward to improve dystonia care and treatment and understanding. And so how did it change my work and my relationship with the research in dystonia? I would say very similar to what Mark said, made me feel very proud of being recognized as a researcher in the field of dystonia, but also increased my commitment to the dystonia field. So it's definitely a way of cementing commitment towards the goal of improving dystonia care. And also from a practical point of view, I would say that having received the award gave me a chance of starting actually on the day of the recipients of the award some collaborations that are lasting. I got to know Professor Pisani that day, and since then we've started a friendship and a collaboration that's certainly going to be very important for my work in dystonia. So that's just to see an example. And of course, a series of events that started from receiving the award and having a practical impact on my work in Estonia. So many, many consequences.
That's great. Yeah, what a coincidence that it was hosted in Rome the year that you got the award. Are you from that region of Italy?
I'm from Milan.
Milan, okay. The distance isn't that far in Italy. That's great. And so you both shared what it meant for your research, but what do you think that these types of awards mean to young researchers or even those who are still in school in order to motivate perhaps research, especially on orphan diseases like dystonia? Mark, I'd love to start with hearing your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that at the very sort of earliest level, so in medical school, for example, I think that at that level, awards like, you know, from particular disorders like dystonia, that can really just open somebody's eyes to the fact that this thing exists, because they might not have heard of it at all during medical school. And then at a later stage, I think it does signify something about the importance of the condition. You know, somebody somewhere cares enough about this condition that they're putting forward this award, and you know, it's an opportunity to do something. And I think that, you know, research in general is about being inspired by something and by someone. It could be patients, it can be teachers, and awards like this add to that as well, as kind of promoting an area of research. It's not everything, obviously, because you need a lot more than this, but I think it does help just put a disorder on the map sometimes and inspire people to work harder towards it.
Yeah, and funding is always something that you have to work around to get research funded and stuff, and so how have you seen the pharmaceutical companies kind of play into this and in their support for the research of, in particular, dystonia?
Well, I think that's a tricky one, because one of the complexities of dystonia is how many different ways in which the brain can go wrong can end up with dystonia. So just in very basic terms, you can have dystonia as part of structural damage to the brain, or as part of a degenerative process going on in the brain, or as sort of isolated dystonia, often a genetic abnormality, but something which produces relatively pure dystonia. And the mechanisms behind the dystonia there, at least on some levels, are probably very different. And so that makes it complex for convincing pharmaceutical companies to invest, because they want a nice, clean, single target in a way. So I think that the work to do for dystonia, which definitely needs better pharmaceutical treatments alongside many other things, is to try and help pharmaceutical companies navigate through this complex clinical field and actually be able to focus them down on particular areas of need or particular areas where there might be a better understanding of mechanism.
Niccolo, what would your advice be to young scientists who are working on these types of preclinical trials and interested in getting involved in dystonia or research in this field?
So I'd like to answer this question also by kind of picking up some of the things that Mark discussed, and being myself a young researcher and who only recently, fairly recently, came out of PhD. So I think that the award was important to, as I said, cement my commitment to dystonia and participated to making so that my career going forward will be committed to continue working on dystonia, because dystonia it's not as easy to find and support and funding for dystonia as it could be for other disorders. So it's important to feel this commitment, I think. And how to motivate young researchers to work in preclinical research? I would say that as neurologists, we tend to have a natural tendency for research. And so I think that there's probably a selection bias. The personality of somebody who becomes a neurologist, there's an inquisitive personality, because these are disorders for which often a very effective treatment is lacking, of course, with some exception, and dystonia is no exception to this. So in this regard, I think that many young colleagues have certainly an interest in being involved in research. And of course, the motivation is we know that better treatments will come from better understanding. And so we know that if we want to improve the life and the quality of life and the symptom control of our patients, we need to dig deeper into this mechanism. We need to work on genes. We need to work on molecular pathway. We need to work on animal models. And that's how we're going to come with some of those answers that pharmaceutical companies may want to hear to bring forward. It's an exciting time in this regard, because I think that academic institutions may play a bigger role in some of the initial discoveries that may lead to hopefully some therapeutic improvement. So there's we have a lot of opportunity, and we can play a big role in this.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because, you know, things are just moving faster and faster. We're in the digital age. I'm really curious to hear both of your thoughts about the future and the future for dystonia research, as well as cures, a potential cure if you see that, or better treatments for patients with dystonia.
I think that one question, I suppose, which is unanswered, is to what extent is the dystonia one condition in terms of its end mechanism? Dystonia is something which is clinically defined by the observation of a particular type of abnormal muscle activity, which leads to posturing typically of parts of the body of a particular sort. So I think there's a key question in my mind is whether the brain mechanism that causes that abnormality of postural muscle control is a thing which is shared across different causes of dystonia. If that's the case, that would be quite interesting, I think, and quite important from a clinical point of view in terms of treatment, because that would mean that you wouldn't necessarily need to worry what the cause was of the problem, but you might be able to actually do something that would change this end stage, if you like, the end result of the problem that's happened with the brain. And that would be something where you could produce quite a generic treatment for dystonia that might be widely applicable across lots and lots of different causes. Of course, that may not be true. And that leads you to this complicated situation where you have many, many causes of dystonia. And so what is it that links them, or is there anything that links them, or are we in fact dealing with lots and lots of different conditions where you actually have to find lots and lots of different solutions to the problem? And I think that's a key area to try and work out, because it really sort of suggests where you should be focusing research energy at the moment. I don't know what you think of that, Nicolo.
That's exactly how I think, Mark. That's exactly how I think. And actually, I truly think at the same time, we need to understand the diversity of the dystonias, but to look what's unifying amongst the different dystonias. And I truly think that's going to be key. And I think, again, this is one of the areas where genetics and molecular biology can help us to pinpoint to certain converging targets. I mean, exactly as you say, maybe more downstream, and could be the convergence point that could be the potentially the holy grail. Or, I mean, we'll never. It's probably not the right term, but it's something that would put together many different patients that may have different diseases that present with dystonia, and there could be that particular molecule or cellular pathway which is key and shared by all of them. This is really one of the themes that's becoming very important in my research, to try to find what is shared by things that clinically look similar, molecularly or genetically seems very diverse, but we want to go back to that shared molecular aspect. So this journey from something that looks clinically similar, that it's brought very far away from what we know superficially about the genetics of some of these conditions, but then we want to go back to what brings them all together.
It's a fascinating area, and it's just so applicable to dystonia, because dystonia does have this, you know, there is a problem, like we've talked about right at the beginning, about how many, the diversity of illnesses which seem to be able to result in dystonia. And I think that, as you said, Nicola, the sort of genetics almost, you know, it's a bit scary. You know, you have so many genes for things which phenotypically look somewhat similar or relatively similar, and it's finding the commonalities. And I think, you know, that's where I'm interested, particularly at the other end in terms of neurophysiology and kinematics of movement. So the actual, what's the movement problem that's happening? And that's where, maybe digital technology has a role to play there in terms of being able to actually characterize what the movement problem is. Because, you know, somebody who has movement disorder expertise can say that is dystonia. But exactly what it is that you're seeing and what it is that the movement problem is actually often a bit difficult to define. And there's dimensions of the problem, just from the movement bit I'm talking about. So there's dimensions of the movement problem which you can't really appreciate just by sight. And so actually recording it in terms of what are the muscles doing, that provides a wealth of information more than what you can actually see.
Yeah. And something that comes to mind too, we're sitting here, it's 2020. Mark, you received the award in 2003. And Niccolo, you received it in 2017. A lot has changed even outside of your subject expertise, which is dystonia and researching neurological conditions. We now just live in more of a digital age where we can do things like what we're doing today. We're meeting online. And Niccolo, I understand that you're in Chicago, right? And Mark, you're in London, and I'm all the way over in San Diego in California. I mean, that's something that must have changed the environment too, in terms of allowing researchers to collaborate and for information to flow quicker and smoother. Is that something that you see going on more, is collaborating not just on a European level, but around the world?
Yes. Yes, I see this happening. And yes, now we're not allowed to travel as we used to. And I think that if there's something that we have learned through these difficult times is how much can be done without having in the same place. And while we all miss traveling and meeting and having discussion with colleagues, the truth is that we can, at least we have not slowed down our interactions, the collaboration, our scientific discussion that we have with colleagues. And I can make some examples of some great discussions about dystonia that I've been having through the pandemic with colleagues that are far away. So that's just to say that thanks to technology, with this, we can overcome all these difficulties that we're having, not to slow down our efforts and thinking and will to make a difference for dystonia patients.
And I think that it also goes for patients as well. There's much more opportunity to get information. I mean, obviously, information is of varying qualities out there, but it's certainly easier to get together and actually to be a more visible force for pushing, for example, dystonia up the agenda and trying to get things to change and sharing experience from one country to another about services and about how to mobilize funding and a greater understanding of dystonia.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up the patients, Mark, because that's kind of where I want to end this discussion, is talking to both of you about what the patients have meant to you. If you have any stories, of course, you can choose not to disclose names, but are there any meetings with patients or anything like that throughout your career that has been meaningful, like had a special impact on you and the work that you do?
Well, I mean, there's so many, to be honest. I think one of the things which gets me up in the morning is meeting people. And that's why I'm a doctor. I mean, it's about, I think it's an amazing privilege to meet so many people who have so many different lives, and at a time when often things are quite difficult. So people are often then at their most honest, actually, with themselves and with you, whether you're doing a good job or a bad job, they'll tell you. And so communication is quite special in medical encounters for that reason, for its honesty, I think, or at least it can be. I think probably like almost every other doctor, you know, seeing people living despite significant adversity and problem is an amazing thing to see every day, and to see how people carry on and still live and do amazing things despite what they're going through. I suppose it teaches you the value of support as well. So thinking of people who have a support network around them compared to people who are going through being ill alone, it really does show up the importance of networks, of social networks, and that human beings are fundamentally, you know, we're connected to one another, and that's where we work the best. The final thing is just that it's not all about cure necessarily, that actually sometimes very small things, or apparently small things, do make a difference. Well, you know, I've come to realize that they're talking about an incurable illness, for example, is not a very good phrase, because there's always something that can be done to change a situation. Even if it's not making somebody better in terms of curing their illness, there are many things that can be done which change a situation, even when people are facing really desperate problems.
Quality of life is the goal, right? Increasing the patient's quality of life, and so that they can better cope with what is known as a chronic illness, dystonia. Niccolo, do you have any meetings with patients or perhaps other researchers that have meant a lot to you in working with dystonia? You guys both mentioned Kailash Bhatia earlier, and of course, David Marsden, who is the reason for the award. But yeah, I would love to hear if you have any special meetings with people or anything that has influenced your work with dystonia.
Well, in terms of patients, definitely some of the work that led to the paper that was actually awarded, the David Marsden Award, was actually for me a very interesting world in the world of dystonia, because it involved traveling. I had just arrived to England, and I met with this very large family that we studied and led to the genetic finding that we published. And to me, that was such an interesting experience, because I would visit where these patients would live, and I met patients from the same family of different age with dystonia that had different degree of severity. But it was very interesting to see how people, and very important for me to see how people with dystonia live in their day-to-day life, and was very inspiring. So, and it was important for me to be able to tell to the family, well, we managed to understand what your disease is caused by, and this may actually turn out to be something that influenced the way we think about dystonia or what we know about dystonia. So I was very grateful to the family for what they did to make that happen. Kailash, Professor Bhatia has inspired and enabled most of my work and my passion for dystonia. But another person that I think has been more recently very important is a very important researcher who comes from my home country, Italy, who is Antonio Pisani. I met him I got to know him at the David Marsden Award. And since then, we have started talking about our views on dystonia, sharing ideas, discussing papers and findings. And he comes from my own country, which is a beautiful country, but scientifically has some difficulties. And to see somebody like him who managed to pioneer and achieve such amazing results and understanding of dystonia in spite of all the difficulties that the Italian system sometimes can put has been very inspirational. So he's a person that's been important in this regard.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because it sounds like hearing both of your stories that the award has not only been important for the work that you've been performing in terms of the research and that actual focus, but also on the networking aspect. So allowing you to get into a context where you've made more connections that are also focusing on dystonia. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up unless you have anything else to add, Niccolo or Mark. I'm really happy that you decided to join us for the podcast episode. This is a new podcast that we started for this very reason, to bring people together and to have a discussion about dystonia from all different types of angles. So we have patients come on, and we have you guys, researchers, doctors. We're going to talk to a physiotherapist here in a couple weeks. So yeah, I just want to thank you for coming on and participating.
It's a pleasure. And it's a great idea to try and get people together, because it's from that that the best things happen, really, in the end. And the more that we can get together, particularly from doctors, researchers, patients, carers all together, I think the better research we'll do.
Perhaps one last thing I'm going to ask you for is, if there's anyone out there right now considering applying for the David Marsden Award, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to apply, and I would tell them that they need to up their game and to really think hard about the work that they're doing. And I think that if you look through the work that's been successful in the David Marsden Award, it's often work that combines, a research advance, but with some clinical aspect that makes sense. So there's something about it that is directly translatable to a relevant thing from a clinical point of view. And I think it's that kind of research which in the end is most useful, because it marries this clinical and research aspects together.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. And I would say apply and think about what you're doing, and think that you want to, what you're researching on is very important for patients that will hear about the work that you've done if you're awarded. So have them in mind when you're carrying out your work. And yes, do as best as you can. Just go for it. Just go for it.
Thank you once again to Mark and Niccolo for participating in this month's podcast episode. And we'd actually like to add a little bit of information here at the end, because this year, 2021, actually marks the 10th anniversary of the David Marsden Award. Dystonia Europe is delighted to be able to give this award to a young researcher for the 10th time. The award is given every other year, and the first time was in 2003, when Mark Edwards was the recipient. So we're very grateful for this generous support from Ipsen, who make it possible for us to continue hosting the David Marsden Award. And as always, thank you to all of our sponsors for this podcast, who make it possible for us to show up here every month. That is Boston Scientific, Medtronic, and Ipsen. Make sure to tune in again next month. And as always, don't forget to live life with a positive twist.